eat for breakfast most days?
Either muesli or eggs and toast.
What's your favorite go-to snack?
I don't really snack anymore.
What's your favorite takeout food?
Arepas.
What is that?
It's a Venezuelan kind of like sandwich taco. It's the best thing I've ever eaten in my life.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So what's a favorite room in your home and why?
I would say our living room. It's kind of like my therapist, my place to go at the end of the day and completely unwind and not think about anything.
So if you're on a budget, what's the most important accessory to add to a room?
I like to add old books with pretty spines that you can get from the thrift store. Under $5, it adds a pop of color, a little bit of history. It's easy and simple.
Hey, Tedra.
Hey, Jade.
So today on the show, we're speaking with Melissa Coleman. She's the talented designer, cook, and creative behind the Faux Martha. Melissa lives with great intention and a level of thoughtfulness that really spoke to us today. She adopted minimalism into her daily life, in her kitchen, her home, and even her wardrobe. We discuss how her blog came to be, how she wrote her book, and how she got the book deal, her many moves around the U.S., and her decision to marry and say I do to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where her and her husband chose to put down their roots. Melissa and her husband built and designed their beautiful home, which is eye candy for all of us on her social platforms and her blog. She is so real. She's good. She's thoughtful and down to earth. And she left us completely inspired, not just by the conversation we had today, but also in her creative writing. We absolutely love this chat, and we know you guys will too. Quick reminder, if you're listening on the go, don't forget to check out the show notes. They're on our website, and we have them for each episode. You'll find the answers to many of the questions asked during the episode. Also, before we start the show, you guys know what's coming. If you're liking the show, we'd love for you guys to share it with a friend. It's super easy. Just click the share button and spread the get to know love. Thanks, guys. You're listening to We Get to Know podcast. And for years, we've been following some of the most inspiring creatives, innovators, social media influencers, and bloggers. Simply put, we get inspired. The next best thing to following our favorite people is hearing their stories straight from them. So listen in as we get to know Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, where are we talking to you from today?
We are in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in my house at my desk, which is right off the kitchen.
So pretty much anyone that follows you will know that you're in Minnesota, but tell like people who maybe don't know, like what's some of your background and where did you grow up?
I grew up all over. We moved around from my dad's job. Everybody thinks that we were in the military, but we were not. I was born in North Carolina, moved to Alabama, then to Colorado, loved the snow, fell in love with the snow in Colorado, then moved to Texas where there's really no snow. And as soon as I became an adult, I wanted to live at a higher latitude. I think I have that right, latitude versus longitude. So then we moved, my husband and I got married, moved to Chicago, then to New Haven, Connecticut, and now we're planted under the snowbanks of Minnesota, and I am so happy in a pile of snow.
Okay, that is a lot of moves. So you've probably got it down. It's like the purge happens. You get to purge a lot.
Yeah, I actually think it's a big part of what has helped me to become a minimalist or live a more pared down life, because for a while we were just moving unopened boxes around the country, which was silly.
It just seems senseless. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to back up a little bit. Is there one block of time where you said like, this is sort of where I grew up, or was it split up?
It's so weird. My largest block is Texas, but the memories that are burned into my head are from the 2 years we lived in Colorado, which was the move before Texas. I'm not a Texan, but I grew up in Texas.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Where did you meet your husband?
I met him actually in Arkansas. So there was another state in there at school in Arkansas. And we were in intro to psychology class together. And he ended up becoming a psychologist. And I just had to take the class.
Okay, interesting. So what were you going to school for?
I was going to school for graphic design. I was also a soccer player, but I was mainly going to school for graphic design.
So what were sort of your early envisions of like your career or maybe what you would do with your future?
You know, I had no idea. I really had no idea. I knew I liked to make things before I went off to school. I painted. I did that all throughout high school, took as many art classes as I could. I also baked and I destroyed my mom's kitchen. I'm sorry, Mom. If you're listening to this, she still questions if I can clean a kitchen. But I'm a creator, and I never really knew how exactly. I never had a clear vision, but I always knew that I wanted to create, and that has been consistently clear into adulthood.
I think something that's kind of interesting is when you're younger and you're creative, you don't really think of, at least that back when I was younger, I didn't really think of many fields I could go into that were creative that would have sort of supported that like outlet. But now like things are so different. I feel like there's just like endless ways to sort of like build a future with, you know, creative ideas that I just don't even know. And maybe it's social media, you know, or the blogging world like wasn't around, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. My dad actually, I painted all throughout high school. A lot of my friends went to art school and my dad was like, no, you can't be a painter for a living.
Right.
So that kind of hurled me into graphic design. I didn't necessarily choose graphic design. It was my only choice. And
it was the path.
Yeah. It was the path. And they were like, all right, you can take graphic design, but you also need to take some business classes, which just went straight over my head. But yeah, today you can. It's so cool.
It is cool. And I think it just gives like freedom to creatives. Like, I mean, I do feel like a creative, but because I went into the business world, I just never had that outlet. And I would do like little side projects here or there, or small little home renovations with my family or something like that. But I just see like the possibilities now, like even like a little bit like more mature in life, being like, no, it's not too late. People are doing it. You know?
Yeah.
Hence the podcast. But so tell me, early on, did you get a graphic design job or did you sort of start like your blog early on in your early days?
Both. So I worked as a graphic designer, I guess for a year without blogging. And then I got married and moved to Chicago with my husband, and he was in school full time and he worked. And so I needed something to do on the weekends and at night. This was 2008. Everybody was kind of starting to blog then, but everybody was a small number of people compared to now.
Yeah, I'd say you were definitely in the early bubble of, for sure.
Yeah, surprisingly. And I just blogged because I needed an outlet outside of work. I wanted to be my own creative director. I was not that at work. I was a young junior designer. So I started blogging probably a year after graduating school, and I continued to work as a graphic designer for a lot of years until I made the full leap to blogging. And even as a blogger, I started out as a food blogger. And once I quit designing, I was like, all right, delete designer out of my byline. And a year later, I realized I'm just a designer. I'm a designer through and through. I design recipes. I design my home. I design the way my day works to make it more functional. I am a designer at my core, and I just can't get rid of it.
Oh, I love that. Okay. So tell me, when you decided to start your blog, like what did that look like for you? And how did you really even know how to do a blog?
Oh, I had no clue. The funny thing is we had to take web design. Now this was, what year was this? I graduated college in 2007. So it was prior to 2007. I had to take a web design class, only 1 hour of web design. I hated it and was like, this is just a fad. This website thing is going to be gone. Print is supreme. And then I started a blog, and then it was really easy. You could have a WordPress.com site for free and you didn't have to know anything. And then years later, I find myself doing web design. I even designed websites and blogs for a while. I ended up doing everything in life I swore I'd never do. I swore I'd never write either. After college, I swore I'd never do photography. I hated photography in college. And I'm doing all of these things now.
The trifecta. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right?
Absolutely.
So you said you started as a food blogger. Like pretty much, was that it? But all food for the most part?
Food with a side of crafts, but heavy on the food.
Okay. So then was it originally the Faux Martha, like from the beginning for your name?
Always. I can almost... pretty clearly, I don't have a good memory of the past, but I can remember sitting at my desk typing in a whole bunch of ideas, horrible ideas. Not that the Faux Martha was any better, but my...
No, it's a great name.
I question my choice, but my grandma in high school, Mimi, always called me Martha Stewart or Betty Crocker because I was the only high schooler baking bread and watching Martha Stewart. Maybe I started that in college, but I was interested in many domestic things. So when the time came to pick a blog, the phone Martha was not yet taken. No wonder why, but I took it and 11 years later, I'm stuck with it.
Well, I think it's holding up because as soon as I don't remember when I found you online, but when I did, I remember thinking like, what a clever name. I mean, it instantly tells me something, you know, it tells me without knowing anything else that you care about the way your home looks, you care about food, you know, like it gives you like an instant definition in some ways. So I think it's really clever. I love it.
Thank you.
Okay. So how long, like, were you doing your blog? You said you were doing graphic design overlap for a while, but when you decided to do your blog full time, like how long was it before you realized like, this is going to be my career?
A really long time. I didn't think I could ever actually leap full time into blogging. And so I kind of leapt slowly, or I imagine if I'm hopping across a river to get to the other side, there were a lot of little stepping stones. It wasn't one major leap. So I quit designing for a firm. I should say this too. I was putting my husband through graduate school. I was our sugar mama. And so I had to keep a consistent job. So I started leaping when he started making a little bit of money. And I worked as a graphic designer, stopped working full-time for someone else, and then started designing blogs with a friend. I felt like it was a good way for me to make money and not fully commit to blogging. And then as it kept going, I realized I had my daughter in that time and I was working all the time, not what I wanted to be doing, and probably spending 75% of my day designing websites for other people, 25% working on my blog, and my blog was making just as much money as the web design. So when I realized that, I knew it was time to get to the other side of the river. I was really close at that point, but it was time to just take a full plunge. Maybe I missed the bank and I went straight into the water and took a full plunge in.
That's exciting. I mean, I can imagine like you're trying to figure it all out and then realizing, hey, like, I mean, I'm sort of able to do this on my own without any outside, you know, resources or help. I love that.
Yeah.
So when did your like love of cooking start? So you said you'd love to bake bread when you were young, but when you got into your own home, did you sort of have a foundation of cooking or did you like, where did it sort of start for you?
Yeah. Well, I was born, I love to eat. My mom used to tell me, Melissa, eat to live, don't live to eat, but I am still living to eat. I'm sorry again, mom. But I just came out with a love for food. I loved eating it. And then when I got old enough to bake, I started trying to bake and make my own food. And then that continued into college. And college was when I really jumped off. Like you had your own apartment, you could cook for yourself, and I did. And I got the King Arthur baking handbook. I don't think there's the word Bible in there, but it kind of became my Bible. It's this big muted pink book. And I read through it cover to cover. I learned everything I could know about whole grain baking. And it was almost my gateway drug into the kitchen and cooking for myself, feeding for myself, feeding myself, feeding my friends. And then it turned into feeding my family.
I love that. So pretty organically with a healthy dose of passion behind it, right?
A healthy dose of passion. Yeah, I didn't really know much. I did watch Martha Stewart, so I got to learn how to do a lot of the basic things like chopping or sauteing by watching her and probably Ina.
I remember the early days of the Food Network. I just became addicted to it. I mean, I'm talking like, I don't want to age myself too much, but who cares, right? I am right. Who I am. But there was this show, and I can't remember the guy's name. He was sort of like this redheaded guy, and he would stand with like a metal table in front of him and two wire racks behind him. And like, he was one of the early shows on like the Food Network, and just falling in love with just watching people cook. And to this day, I sort of love to watch it be done more than actually do it myself, but I do love to get in and cook. But yeah, I lack the motivation a little bit.
I feel you many nights.
So you mentioned in your quick start that you're not snacking anymore. I was just a little curious to follow up on that and be like, what's that about? Is that like, was there anything behind it? You just decided like, hey, it's not good to snack too much.
It's interesting. We all have a relationship with food. I feel like I could write a story about my relationship with food. I loved food and I loved food so much. I probably ate too much of it for a really long time and I didn't always feel good. And probably, I love homeostasis more than anything in this world. And I want to feel really good all the time so I can create and make things and just go about things without worrying about how my body is feeling. And that's kind of how I got into the whole grain baking, because I loved baked goods. I thought, well, maybe I can make these a little bit healthier. And then it kind of kept trickling from there, like, oh, maybe I could solve this problem this way. And I realized I was overeating a lot, and I realized that I wasn't allowing myself to be extremely satisfied at mealtimes, at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I was snacking a lot throughout the day. And now that I eat really satisfying meals, I don't snack. And then when I get to dinner time, I have the freedom to eat a good substantial dinner without guilt. And it's been a huge game changer for me.
I love that.
Also have this really strange thing that I can't eat like within 3 hours before I run. I break out in hives. It's super strange. And so it kind of happened that I didn't snack so that I could run and then eat an even better dinner.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I mean, was there something that, well, I mean, I guess you sort of explained it, but was there something that like triggered like the idea that you saw like maybe an unhealthy eating pattern, or was it just that you wanted to feel good? And so you just made these self adjustments on your own?
Yeah.
Like, did you come across anything that was like a light bulb going off or anything?
Yeah, I definitely did. So I played soccer and I had two big knee injuries that resulted in surgeries. So I was pretty active. And then after you have a surgery, especially a knee surgery, you're not so active for a lot of months in a row. And I still love to eat. So compounding all those factors, I gained a lot of weight. I'm a short frame. And the second knee surgery, I was just so frustrated. And I remember there's a couple of things I can remember in my life. You guys are going to think I remember everything by these stories I'm telling. But I can remember standing in between my kitchen and my living room with my dad. I think I was in college at this point, and I was so frustrated with my weight. And I was telling my dad this, probably in tears. And he said, Melissa, I can send you to a nutritionist, or, and I don't remember exactly what he said, but that or dot, dot, dot kind of filled into my brain, or I could figure this out. I could take control of this. So I kind of hurled myself into nutrition and thought about majoring in it, but I am artistic minded and not science minded. So I don't think that would have been the best pairing, but it became my hobby. And I learned as much as I could about feeding myself. And the result of that was a healthier relationship with food, eating really good food, understanding the food system. It kind of just triggered a snowball effect of acquiring a lot of different pieces of knowledge about myself and about the outside food world.
Man.
And it kind of continues to unfold for me.
I could listen to this all day. Like, I love the idea of just basically becoming mindful, and to do that, like even like in college, that's kind of early to like grasp that concept and then go with it. But I love that. Yeah. I'm actually trying to incorporate that into my life a little bit more.
I think that's why I like design so much, because design, you can acknowledge a problem and then you can solve it, but you have to acknowledge the problem first. And I think it's just the way my mind ticks. I was born a designer. I didn't choose this for myself. I think it's just the way things run upstairs.
Yeah, I love that.
Hey guys, we're going to pause for a minute to tell you about one of our partners. Anyone interested in 30% off the best vitamins? We know health and nutrition is important to everyone. One thing that goes hand in hand with our health is supplemental care. We've partnered with Dr. C Vitamins to offer you a 30% discount off their premium pharmaceutical grade and medically endorsed line of supplements. All vitamins are not created equal. In fact, there is no FDA oversight for supplements. Unlike over-the-counter vitamins, Dr. C supplements are manufactured without commonly found synthetic ingredients. I mean, you guys, who wants synthetics going into our bodies? They're also non-GMO and gluten-free. Their standards are so high, these vitamins are actually manufactured just like a prescription drug would be in an FDA-registered facility. Most vitamins do not subject themselves to this level of oversight. People are always asking if we take these personally, and we do. I take the D3-K2 combo to support bone health, memory, mood, and immune support, and their collagen biotin that supports strong hair, nails, and skin. And then when I'm having those nights where I'm having a hard time falling asleep and unwinding, I take the melatonin B6 combo, and it really helps me gently fall asleep naturally. So give them a try, you guys. Go to drccares.com, use our code WEGETTONOW, and save 30% on your next order. Now enjoy the rest of the interview.
So what does it look like in your house then, cooking? I mean, do you cook every day? Do you bulk cook, or how does it sort of flow in your home?
Both. I batch bulk cook because, so I should back up. I really loved cooking before I had my daughter because I had all the time in the world and we could eat dinner yeah. whenever we wanted. When she came along, there were new parameters, pretty sharp parameters around when and where and what dinner time looked like. And so I'd say in the last 5 years, I've really learned it's another design problem of what are all these problems? Oh, there's a lot of these problems and how can I solve them? So I do a lot of bulk cooking, or I will now take parts of one recipe and add it to another recipe. So I'm like kind of cooking my way through the week, giving myself little head starts all throughout the week. And I'll do that with something as simple as quick pickled onions or quick pickled radishes, or I'll do, this sounds disgusting, but I don't know a better way to talk about it. I'll do bulk meats, like I'll roast a whole chicken and then pull off the meat. We can make 4 meals out of that one tiny chicken.
Oh yeah. That's not disgusting at all. That's like sounds delicious and smart.
It's so wonderful. Bulk meat always just sounds a little like,
So you have the whole hog in the kitchen is what you're saying.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I'm sure like when you welcomed your daughter into the world, like everything changes. You have a whole new balance to figure out in life.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about when did like the minimalist idea sort of come into your head? You mentioned like you're moving, so you sort of went through purges, but like when did you sort of commit to that as more like a lifestyle? And then how does that show up in your kitchen? And then how does it show up in your home?
Mm-hmm. Minimalism is one of those other things that I think in a lot of ways it chose me before I chose it. And I could see it when I looked as far back in high school in my paintings. I loved negative space. I mean, it's kind of the same idea of minimalism, but it's showing up in a painting as negative space. And then when I was a graphic designer, I loved the idea of white space, which is what we called it, which is negative space. And then as I became an adult, I realized I didn't have white space or negative space in my life, in my closet, in my pantry, in my calendar, and it was making me frenetic. And I just carried that chaos with me everywhere. It didn't stop in the pantry or in my closet. It kind of hurled itself into my relationship and I was a little frenetic. And so minimalism was something that I just kind of kept picking up this idea of white space or negative space. If I pare down, I tend to do better. And over time you realize I need to help myself out. I need to set myself up for success. And minimalism was this tool I kept picking up to solve the problem of too much. And I will say moving around helped. It helped me to see what I was doing. I was, you know, somebody says, where do I start with minimalism? This is everybody just rolls their eyes. Why would you tell me this? I want something extremely practical. But I tell people to start by noticing your habits. All your answers are right there by noticing what you're already doing and moving around and moving the same boxes around to multiple states, finally unpacking them, realizing we didn't need them. That was me noticing what in the world am I doing? And I do that all the time. Like all the time, I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And those provide the answers and kind of hurl me back into choosing to pick up minimalism or white space or negative space as a tool.
I think like years ago, minimalism was sort of like associated with like cold,
yes,
dark. It's just not the case anymore. It's like people are bringing it to the forefront and being like, this is like a lifestyle. It's a way to live. It's fresh. It's like, it's inviting and it's warm. Like it doesn't have to be cold. I mean, your home is perfect example. But yeah, the idea of like, oh, so you're a minimalist. That means like you have nothing in your home. It's not true.
Right. And it's so counterintuitive because I use minimalism to create more. Like I want to do more of the things that I love to do and less of the things I hate to do. And adulting is a great time to learn about minimalism because so much of adulting is doing things that you don't really want to do. And some things you have to do, like taxes, darn. But there's other things that we don't have to do. We just do them because people did them before and everyone around me is doing it. But you can delete some things out of your life and ordered to create space to do more of the things you love.
So you talk about, and I want to talk about this in the book, but I want to ask you now, since we're talking about this, like how it worked in your kitchen to sort of like pare down your kitchen. Cause I know it's like easy. I mean, listen, I'm a little bit of a glass junkie and dish junkie. Like yeah. I love, you know, beautiful glasses and beautiful dinnerware, but, and it's like, I don't want to give them up. But at the same time, like I see my cabinets are getting a little full. Like, so what do I do?
Yeah. So I start back with a space audit because it's really hard to make these decisions. There's emotional attachments to our things, whether they have high value or low value on Craigslist. So I start by taking a space audit, understanding how much space you have to work with. And if you have enough space to keep those dishes that you love, then keep those dishes that you love. But if you don't have enough space, if keeping those dishes is creating another problem that's kind of slowing down your everyday, your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, not your special occasion, then it's time to attend to those. And, you know, maybe there's another, I like to think about or categorize spaces as nearby spaces and faraway spaces. So maybe there's a faraway space that's not in your everyday spaces that you can store those things that you love and store them in a manner that you can go retrieve them, that you remember them, and you can use these things that you love. It's a dynamic process because everybody loves different things about their kitchen, and that's the beauty of it. It's also really frustrating because there's no precise answers.
Mm, that's a great, great, great explanation. Okay, so one other thing I want to touch on before we move on to your home and the book. You talk about having a uniform. So I was like,
I'm in it right now.
Even into her wardrobe. Because like, if you open up my closet, I tend to wear like only black, and everyone mm-hmm. who knows me knows this. And so you open up my closet and I have 50 black shirts, you know, it's like ridiculous, but it's my uniform. I maybe don't need so many of them, but tell me about yours. And then like, how does that work into even your closet?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a broken record. Kind of what I've done is the same pattern, the same thing I've done to my kitchen. I did it actually to my closet first, and I do it to every little area of the home. And I would wake up every morning getting ready for work, trying to get to work on time, which I'm not sure that I ever quite made it on time. And a big problem was my wardrobe. I'd just open up those drawers. I'd always reach for the same thing, but usually that thing that I loved to wear was dirty because I had already worn it. And I had a pile of clothes that I never ever wore. They were just taking up space, and we were in a teeny tiny apartment. We had no space. And so eventually, this took years. This was many years process of me noticing the same thing over and over again for years. But I realized I like to wear the same couple of things. I like to wear the jeans that fit me really well, that make me feel good about myself. The same with the shirts. I like to wear shirts that wash well, that are consistent. I can count on them. And I came to the point like, why am I keeping all this variety that I think I'm supposed to keep that I'm not actually using? So I just got rid of it and then bought a couple chambray shirts. I have two pairs of the exact same jeans, one pair of white jeans. I should have bought two of those. I have like 12 pair of the exact same underwear, same color. There's just no question. When I get up in the morning, I put clothes on. I don't have to think about that. The older I've gotten, I realize I need to create space to handle the things that I can't control, because there's a lot of those things, but there's a lot of things that I can control. So I need to handle those ahead of time, so I'm ready for the can't control part of life.
You're inspiring me like crazy. I think I'm going to clean out my closet this afternoon. Okay, so I'm going to head back to the blog a little bit and talk about, so you started off, you said it was a few years before it sort of really started getting going. Like, how far into it were you when you were like, this is taking off? Like, it's surprising you how it's taking off.
Oh man, I'm kind of strange in that I get lost in the work. I really just love to work. I love to make things. And so I would kind of notice that things were happening, but not really. It took my husband actually for me to take that leap, because he would say, Melissa, your friends, all your peers, they're doing sponsored projects. Are you not getting them? And I was like, oh, there's some things in my inbox, but I don't pay attention to my inbox.
This is such a true creative mindset. So true.
It's been quite debilitating too. I almost quit blogging actually last year.
What?
Yeah, because, you know, blogging turned from, or it started as this thing you could do whenever you wanted. There were no stipulations. You could just create, create, create. You're now working with businesses. There are deadlines. Oh, I want it this way. It kind of turned into a business. And I wasn't planning on that. I didn't structure anything that way. I was still this free spirit creating in the corner, not paying attention to my email, which was quite problematic if I wanted this thing to be sustainable, which I decided I want this thing to be sustainable.
That's really interesting. We talked to the girls. I don't know if you know the food blog, The Modern Proper.
Yes.
We talked to Natalie and Holly yesterday. Their episode will be coming out soon. But they were sort of saying, like, as their business grows, they want to hire the people to do the things that they don't want to do so that they're free to focus on what they do want to do. I mean, that's not a new concept, but I love that they're implementing it. And it's sort of the same thing. I mean, before you quit your blog, I'm sure your husband's probably like, wait, well, why don't we hire someone to answer your emails or whatever the next steps would be for something like that. But
yeah,
it's interesting how, like, I mean, to set off as a creative and then end up like, oh, I have a full-fledged business in my lap. And like, what am I going to do with this? You know?
Yeah, it was terrifying. And at the same time, that it really kind of exploded. I mean, exploded is a loose term, but I was also launching my book and people were calling me, or I was being told I'm an expert now. And I'm like, whoa. I'm a creator. I like to be behind my computers making stuff, computer singular, making stuff. I'm not a business owner. I'm not an expert. How do I get out of here fast?
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so tell me, how did the book come about? Like, you're going along doing your work, and then how did the book come out?
Yeah, I swear my editor who became my editor, was just peeking into my window, because I wasn't planning on doing a book. I knew it was a task that was probably a little too big for me, and I liked to create every day, so that would take the place of that. But I got an email from Rachel West, who became my editor, and she pitched this book to me. She pitched The Minimalist Kitchen to me and asked if I would write it, and I didn't respond, like many emails. I didn't respond. And then she wrote me again, and I was like, wait a minute, how does she know I can write this book? And I was writing about it a little on my blog, so I'm sure she saw it there. But I came to this conclusion that if I didn't write this book, because I wasn't planning on it, somebody else needed to. And I slept on it a couple nights, and I decided I wanted to be the one to write this book. This is what I do. It's what I do all over my home. So that's how it came about. And it was a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And I love the process of it. It was a design problem of dinner time is kind of impossible. It was impossible for me. How do I solve this for myself? If I can do this for myself, then it can work for other people. And it's a dynamic process in that it starts in the kitchen behind the doors and drawers, paring down, understanding what you have, creating almost a stock list for your pantry. And then when you have this really great doable framework in place, you can make a ton of recipes. In the case of the book, it's 100 plus recipes that somehow produce a diversity of flavors. It's what minimalism is. It's paring down to do more. It's the practical application of making more with less.
I mean, what a great tool for someone who's sort of get in the kitchen. They want this, like they want to cook dinners and they have a desire to sort of create those things, but sort of feel lost and overwhelmed by their kitchen. Because I think if you're like a natural in the kitchen, you take for granted people who aren't, you know? And so that's a great tool. Like, I actually am like, oh, I want to buy this book. I mean, I feel very comfortable in the kitchen, but I love the idea of like cleaning out my drawers and getting rid of things that I actually just don't use, or they're not practical, or they're not going to play a big role in my, you know, day-to-day cooking. So, okay. I'm really into that.
Yeah.
I presume that was like a long process, right? Like a year or two to do the book?
It was. I wrote the bulk of the book, so I didn't shoot the book. That was one of the stipulations. I knew the book would never make it to print if I had to shoot it too, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And I navigate the world slowly, so it would be 2022 and we'd still be waiting for the book.
Yeah.
So they shot the book and they did an amazing job. And I wrote it probably over 6 months, then we edited it for 6 months longer. And then during that time, I am figuring out how to use my voice as a communication tool. I went to a media coach, and that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, because the road from my brain to my mouth was unpaved. It was rocky at best. That was kind of the precipitous. It was the precipitous to my crisis last year of, I got to walk away from all this. It's too much. I just want old school 10 years ago blogging, which didn't exist anymore.
Yeah. That's smart. You did the media coaching. I mean, did that help you? I mean, did you feel more confident coming out of that?
Yes. I'm so glad I did it. The process was, and only because of how bad I was, it was just kind of humiliating. Like, I need to be an expert and I'm speaking like a second grader. I just often would see the wheel of death on my Apple computer spinning in my head, like, come on, produce, produce, produce. It was wonderful. I'm so glad I did it. It was a really hard process.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit. So you moved to Minnesota. How many years has it been that you've been there?
We've been here 4.5 years.
Okay. And I did read that you have fallen in love.
Absolutely. Head over heels.
Tell me, like, what do you love most about it?
I think, I'm not sure if this is the official tagline, but it's city by nature. And so it's a bustling city with brilliant
And you're in minds. Minneapolis, right?
Yep. We're right in Minneapolis. Brilliant minds, entrepreneurs, business owners. And then you've got a lake that's 10 minutes away that you can go walk around that feels like you drove an hour away, which makes it a really down-to-earth city. It was a city that was really kind to me too. We've moved around a lot. And when we moved here, I felt like people, especially in the creative world, people welcomed me in and they invited me in. And other places I've lived, I kind of had to pay my dues before I got invited in. And this was such a welcoming place for me professionally.
Wow, that is nice. I've never really heard something described like that. What did that sort of look like for them to welcome you in? What did that mean?
The day I got here, I was getting invitations to come to like a work happy hour, or even if I invited people to a get together, they came. They didn't know me. They knew me online. They didn't know me in person, but they came. And then another relationship started from there and there and there. And it kind of, I keep using snowballed probably because there's piles of snow outside, but it just kind of snowballed and it felt like home really fast here for me.
Okay. So you took on the project of building your own new home, your husband. Tell me about that. What was that like? And was this the first home you'd ever built yourself?
Yeah, it was the first home we'd ever lived in. I mean, anything is a home, any structure is a home, but we had always lived in apartments before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's a big change, just that.
Oh, huge. We had to learn how to mow the lawn. Like, we had grass or water a flower. Like, it was a big change. But we had moved around a lot. And when we moved here, when we knew that we were moving away from New Haven, Connecticut to who knows where at that point, we decided that this next move, we were going to put down some roots because we were just hopping all over. And we just had my daughter. She was 9 months when we moved to Minnesota. And we wanted to give her some roots. And we kind of married Minnesota, kind of an arranged marriage. We didn't know each other when we said, I do, but we said, I do. And almost the process of that, of making that mental shift of, I'm going to marry this place. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to get to know it. And it's going to take a while and it's going to be good and it's going to be bad and hard. It has made the transition a lot easier, I would say, overall. It's still been a transition. And building the house was an interesting process. I, like a true artist, we actually bought a lot. It wasn't even for sale. A long story I won't go into. But when I saw the lot, it was a dump zone. Like, people dumped their tires and it backs up to an apartment garage with lights beaming down like an alien ship, spaceship landing.
You're thinking the perfect space.
You know where this is going. And my husband was like, whoa, no.
That's so funny. What made you think it could work?
So location is really important to me. It was right by the river. It's right by the highway. So we can get everywhere really fast. We live in Minneapolis. My husband works across the river in St. Paul. But his commute was really short. We had just had really long commutes in Chicago, like an hour-long commute some days. And that was important for us. So we could get everywhere fast. We were by some water. We had the river. We were by the bike paths. There's tons of bike paths here. And the number one selling factor is we live right by a co-op, so I can walk to the grocery store. And that really sold me. I was like, done. It took many months for him to give himself over to this idea.
Did you design the home or did you work with an architect or how did you sort of?
Yeah, we worked with a builder who's not an architect, but we worked with him and then he had a designer, which was a wonderful process. He is an artist too. So things we were able to come up with were wonderful. I was also a real pain to work with because we're both designers and two designers working together is tricky.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Yeah. And my husband had strong opinions too, which we learned a whole lot about ourselves through the process. It was a hard process like many things, but it was a wonderful process. And we love our home. Like I remind my husband at least once a month that I'm going to pass away in this home.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to? I love your home too. And I think like probably going from apartment to apartment, there's only so much you can do to like really express yourself in that.
Right.
And so to get to like build from scratch, like I love your office, how it's got that sliding glass door and your kitchen. I just love everything. Your guest room, that wallpaper you did on that back wall. Mm. Like, I mean, if you do not know the film Martha, go to her Instagram, check out everything. It's just, you're going to fall in love just like I did. I mean, I love your style. I just think you did it so clean, so fresh, and it's like timeless too. It's not going to go out of style. So
I sure hope not. I wanted to do it all once and just get on with the rest of the life.
Just light and bright. And it's also like such a perfect backdrop for like whatever you want to splash in there from season to season for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Thank you.
So how are you managing like your work-life balance? Because I mean, you're sort of working a lot. You have a young daughter, you have a husband. Like, what does that look like to balance all that?
Yeah. Last year, the year that I was going to walk away from blogging, that was a huge part of the conversation. Internally, it had grown too big too. I was trying to always work part-time so that I could be around for my daughter. I thought it was this cool thing I could create for myself. And it was starting to control me more than I was controlling it. And the bigger my work life got, the smaller my home life got, which is funny because I set out to create this thing to be present in my personal life and I wasn't. So that was a big part of, I have to walk away. I can't let this go any farther. My daughter she was then four. She's remembering me now and I don't want her to remember me like this. And I don't want to be like this for myself or anyone else. It's funny, you know, I tend to my kitchen and my closets and my physical space, but my workspace was completely out of control and frenetic. And that's what I spent a good part of last year figuring out after I finished launching the book. A couple times it came up, what's your next big project? And my answer quickly became me and my work life, and I need to get it under control fast in order to stay. And that's what I did last year. And it was a slow process and it was hard and it was good. And I learned about boundaries, simple things like I need to have boundaries in my work life. I work at home. I can work whenever I want. I should not work whenever I want. Mm-hmm. So I created a lot of boundaries for myself and I've been slowly implementing them, which has been really hard because I've had to let go of certain things that involve other people. And that's really difficult. I'm a people pleaser too. So it's been hard implementing my own boundaries, but the byproduct has been wonderful and my mind feels a lot more settled and a lot less chaotic.
And it's Ronnie. I don't know if you know of Ronnie from the Primal Gourmet. As he always says, you're the boss, applesauce.
I love that.
I mean, it's true. Like you're the boss of your own life. And so I just love how thoughtful you are about all these things. And I mean, a lot of people would just burn out and fry up, you know, but the fact that you sort of saw it coming and maybe were a little deep into it and then like put the brakes on and was like, no, I've got to make some adjustments. I love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So one other question, Jade's about to pop on here and do the fun ask everyone questions. But before I have a question, do you still paint?
Every so often I have a painting. Ah, that's a great question. I have a painting in our dining room and I titled it 2 weeks without internet. Because we were without internet for 2 weeks when we moved into the house. So I think I need to pull the plug on the internet and paint a little bit more. It's something I need to create space for. I don't paint enough. I paint like watercolors with my daughter on very thin paper that runs through to the table and eventually gets thrown away, but nothing permanent right now.
Did you paint that painting that hangs on your like sort of dining room wall?
Yes. That's 2 weeks without internet. Yes.
Is it? Okay. I love that. It's just, it reminded me, I grew up in Indiana. And so I saw that and I was like, this is just like the Midwest, like through and through. I was like, I wonder what that's about, but I love that. So talented. Okay. I wanted to say one thing. I'm going to sign up for this, but I noticed you had like that minimalist kitchen course going on that you just, tell me about that real quick.
Yeah. So we released the book and some people were able to take the book and the concepts and apply it to their kitchen. And other people were like, wait a minute, break it down now, which is how I feel about a lot of topics. So I broke it down further, kind of more step by step, like start here, then go here, then do this, then do that. And it's almost a prequel to the book. There's more worksheets. It's a really doable, user-friendly process. It's in tandem with the book. But another thing we heard from the book is people don't like the same spices as I like. They don't stock the same ingredients, which is to be expected. So this course was created to help people understand how they can create their specific minimalist kitchen, not my minimalist kitchen.
I'm smart. I love that. Yeah. Personalized.
It's always ongoing. I'm not spending as much time in it, but the content is there forever.
Okay. I love that. Okay. Jade, hop on.
Hey. Oh my gosh. You're inspiring me so much, Melissa.
Oh,
unexpected,
thank you.
Sort of. I just discovered you this week when I found out we were going to be talking to you. And I'm like blown away by how eloquently you write and also capture not just minimalism, which is so interesting, but also motherhood. And I'm kind of in the thick of it myself. And I was reading one of your posts. I just want to read like one of the sentences you wrote. You wrote, "Motherhood is both impossible and beautiful. It's the most complicated order that you just keep on ordering. This is why I love simplicity, because some things will always be complex, like motherhood. It's in the DNA. So simplify the things you can control, like your pantry and the credit card," which is just like reiterating what you've been talking about. But I don't think I've ever grasped the value of minimalism in the way that you're describing it. And I'm going to leave this interview like with some good value and I'm going to apply it to my own life. Mm-hmm. It's powerful to just take control over the things you can control so that you're freed up to be able to manage in a better way the stuff you can't control, because there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Minimalism is, it's so empowering. Mm-hmm. It's changed my life. It really has. It's created space for me to work and do things that are really fulfilling that I couldn't figure out after I had my daughter. I was having a major mental, not midlife crisis, maybe quarter life crisis. Like, what do I do? I don't know how to do all this. I feel unfulfilled. And minimalism just keeps working for me.
Yeah, I'm truly, like I said before, like I'm in the thick of it as well. I have two kids and one has autism, actually, which was sort of a more recent diagnosis. And so he's a lot of work. And I had a full-time Air Force career before that. And it's just like, I really think there's a lot to be said now about this mindset of minimalism. And I think I need it in my life. I'm going with it.
Yeah.
Valuable. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had sort of discovered it before having your daughter, right? Like, did it change for you, or I guess it became maybe more valuable to you after becoming a mother?
Yeah, definitely after. I was doing it, but I didn't realize it. It's funny, even building the house, they, you know, when we started, they're asking me, what is my style? And I was like,
I don't know. Cool.
I said something. Yeah. But then as I went through the process, I realized, oh, I'm a minimalist. Like I'm going to take the idea of industrial. I really love industrial design, but I'm going to pare that down. Or I like this design, but I'm going to pare that down. And over again, it was repetition is such a good teacher. Over and over again, I was like, oh, I like things pared down. Oh, I like things pared down, like a broken record. And then I finally listened to that and started applying it, even though I was doing it, not realizing it. Once I realized it, I started applying it to other areas of my life because I saw the success in those other areas that I had already attended to unknowingly. And it's so trusty. It's the only tool that's worked long-term.
Trusty dust. I haven't heard that in a while. Well, yeah, you've really inspired me on this talk, and your feed on Instagram and also just your writing. I mean, I want to sit down and read what you have to say. It's good stuff.
Thank you. It means a lot that you'd say that. Thank you.
All right, we're going to get into some fun stuff. So give us one or two great tips. It could be about anything, blogging, life, whatever.
Okay, so I really love to stay up in the clouds and talk about things. And then I know I'm supposed to be practical. So I'm going to do two tips, one in the clouds, one down below. The first tip is simplicity in its final form always looks so simple, but getting there is always hard. If you know that and you can just trust it, just know that's what's coming. And the down-to-earth practical one is a kitchen gadget tool. And its micro zesters are really great for mincing garlic and ginger and nutmeg and lemons. So you can get rid of your garlic press, and this micro zester is going to do it all for you.
Okay. I was just using my garlic press yesterday. That is genius. I also have a microplaner.
Yeah, which garlic presses are such a pain to clean. I kept mine for so long.
Yeah, you have to scratch out that peel and like...
Yes, and then you smell like garlic for days and in your nose.
I hear you. Yeah. Good tips. Okay. If I call you at 9 a.m. on any given day, what are you most likely doing?
I am dropping off my daughter at preschool, kind of frenetically rushing around to get her signed in and then run home to squeeze in some work.
What's something people would be surprised to know about you?
Oh, I can't believe I'm saying this. I can sing like Cher.
Seriously?
Yes.
I'm popping in. This is Tedra. My mouth just went like, what?
Oh, that's amazing. Do it. Can you do it?
I will. I might be really loud. Should I pull my
mic? Okay, do it. Bust it out. Okay.
Yeah, pull the mic away just to.
Okay.
Do you believe in life after love after love? I can feel something inside and say, I really don't think you're strong enough, no. Oh my gosh, that is amazing. Whoa, yep. That's so cool.
Oh geez, I just did that on the internet.
No, you're the first person who has ever performed. They're most surprised to know about you. So this is the best day.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I'm crying my mascara off laughing so hard. Oh,
yes, geez. That's amazing. I'm thoroughly surprised.
It's shocking. People usually are like, turn around and do that. I can't believe that sound is coming out of your mouth right now.
It's just like her. Wow. Okay, so tell us how you like to decompress.
I usually every day I will pour a glass of wine and cook. It's my time to just zone in and do a little creating. Or at night I like to sit by the fire in the wintertime and then get lost, completely lost in someone else's story. Right now I'm lost in Miriam Maisel, the marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Everybody talks about that. It's in my queue. I'm going to just do it. I'm going to watch it.
Talk about empowering. I love
really?
Her story. It's brilliant. It'll make you
and
laugh.
And funny too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Humorous. Okay.
It's a both and story. It's wonderful.
Okay. So who are three people you love to follow on Instagram?
I love following designers, even though I do a lot of cooking. Olivia Herrick Design. And then Plain English UK. I think I have saved every one of their photos ever. Mm. And a cook would be The First Mess. She is a vegan blogger and a brilliant cook. She does things beautifully. She's a human. I love her.
So excluding social media, do you have a favorite app?
I do. It's called InShot, like I-N, shot. And I make time lapses in there, or I slow down a time lapse and make funny videos in there.
Oh, cool. I haven't heard of that one. So do you have a book that you just can't put down?
I am in the middle of Beautiful Boy, and I'm reading it for my book club.
What is that?
It's a book about addiction and how it plays out in a family.
I'm dying to see that movie, by the way.
I'm waiting until I finish.
Wait, is that the one? That's not the Julia Roberts one, is it?
It's
no,
Steve.
It's Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah.
Okay, describe your perfect day.
This feels like so out of reach, but let's go. Here we go. Perfect day. Maybe my daughter would be with her grandparents, so I wouldn't have to actually plan around her schedule. I'd sleep until 8. That never, ever happens. That's sleeping in for me now. I'd drink coffee, make a really slow breakfast. I'd turn on my early jazz radio station on Pandora. I don't know if people still use Pandora, but I do. And I would go on a winter hike or go sledding. I'd call my daughter, let's go sledding, or go cross-country skiing, stop at a cafe for lunch, leave with a coffee or a latte, and then spend the rest of the day reading by the fire or playing Uno with my family. That feels so out of reach in the days of motherhood.
It sounds so dreamy. Yeah, and I know what you mean. It's like just leisurely going from preferred thing to preferred thing with your family.
That is a good way of putting it. Yes.
You mentioned earlier that you love snow, and that also inspired me because, so we are a military family and have moved around all over the place, and we've spent like maybe, I don't know, the last 10, 15 years in the mostly south.
Okay.
But I grew up in Montreal.
Oh.
And so I grew up with all the four seasons and the tons and tons of snow and everything you're talking about loving. And we just found out we're going to Amherst, Massachusetts next.
Wow.
And I've been so bummed out about it. Oh. And I'm trying to like change my mind. You know, I'm going back to the snow and the cold, but I want to embrace the good of it, which is all those four seasons. So talking to somebody who loves it and isn't complaining about it is cool.
Yes. Okay. I have a quick tip for you that has helped me so much. I keep a list of things that I do. Like we have this calendar. I have it on my blog. It's a download, but I have a teeny tiny bucket list. And so for each month, I recall a couple of things we can do per the season. And it helps me enjoy the season so much better and love it for what it has to offer. So making a list, it's so simple, but I even had to do it for myself the other day. We've had so many snow days, so many days not working, and I'm kind of going crazy. So I made a list of things we could do. And then we just started doing them, and it turned our day around.
That's amazing. I mean, and I know this is true, what you're saying, because I kind of like fall into it maybe a little less mindlessly like than you do, but or less purposely. But yeah, like if I decide, okay, just stop with the cabin fever, the negative thoughts, let's get outside in the snow. We're going to do an hour of play.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come inside and bake something. And then we're going to paint together. Yeah. And it really does turn the day around if you just make a plan, stick to the things. But I like the idea of like the seasonal things. So that it helps me appreciate like maybe apple picking in the fall. Like you're not going to be doing that probably in Florida, you know?
Right. And that's on my list. I have to write it down or else I will never do it. I'll think about doing it, but I will never, ever do it unless I write it down.
Okay. So what's a beverage of choice in the AM and also the PM?
AM would be AeroPress coffee and PM would be a glass of red wine. Even better if it's been aged in a bourbon barrel. It's my new favorite thing.
Oh, yum. I'm all about the red wine, too. Do you have a favorite city that you just shed a tear when you leave?
This is hard. I'm not really attached to many places. I think it's because I moved around so much. But I tell my husband, if we move away from Minneapolis, I will be kicking and screaming. I love this city.
Oh, you're in your favorite city. That's awesome.
I am.
So is the current Netflix addiction the Maisel?
She's on Amazon Prime.
Or maybe Amazon.
Yes. Mm. I am trying to finish House of Cards.
Okay. I quit as well.
Did
I think
you?
Season two, yeah.
Yeah. Trying.
So do you have a song that you have on repeat?
Billy Raful. He's probably unknown to most. It's called Acoustic. My husband hates it. I love it.
Do you have an all-time favorite beauty product?
I am switching over to natural makeup right now, and I really love, for face cleaner, SW Basics. It's vinegar and oils. Absolutely love it.
Who would you love to have coffee with?
I think a designer, and if I could go back in time, I would have loved to have had coffee with Kate Spade and to understand what it's like to be a designer. The weight of being a designer and the beauty of being the designer, kind of the both and for her, what that looked like.
That would have been, yeah, I'd like to be at that table with you guys. Do you live by a motto?
I do. It's a quote by Leonard Cohen, and it's pare down to the essence, but don't remove the poetry.
Gosh, you are overflowing with good stuff. What about a celebrity crush?
I'm going to go with Jennifer Garner. She's so down to earth, and she has chickens, and she cooks in her own kitchen, and she just seems like a real human.
And her Instagram account,
she
hasn't had it that long, but I'm loving following her. She really is just, she keeps it real.
She does. She does.
And kind.
Yes.
Just kind.
She is a good human at the top. I think it's hard to be good at the top, really is.
Truly. It almost means more, actually.
Yeah.
So is there one food you absolutely won't eat?
Sushi. I know. I have texture issues.
Okay.
It's really embarrassing when it comes up and people are like, but you love food. And I'm like, I love the foods I like.
Yeah, that's right. So what meal would you choose as your last meal?
Fire roasted pizza with a fire roasted vegetable and a good bottle of wine, red wine.
What's your biggest pet peeve?
My biggest pet peeve is not being able to be honest with yourself, not to be able to hold the hard parts with the good parts.
Best gift you've ever received?
I am the worst gift giver and worst gift receiver. But probably the gift that sticks out in my mind, my poor mom, who had to deal with my Christmas list. In ninth grade, I think, I begged my mom for an army green corduroy pea coat. It had to be all those things. This is like pre-internet days. She searched everywhere, couldn't find it. And then she ended up finding one at J. Crew like a couple days before Christmas. And I think it was at that point that I was like, I think I'm supposed to be a designer because I have these ideas in my head. They should exist, but not everything does.
What about best gift you've ever given?
I am honestly probably the worst gift giver. I'm way too practical. And I don't think anybody in my life would talk about it.
I sort of feel that way too. Like, I cringe at this question if somebody asked me because I think I'd be like, I don't know, good storage containers for the kitchen?
Exactly. That's what I gave my mom for Christmas. I'm the worst.
Oh, that's funny. What's the last thing you Googled?
How to make snow ice cream because of all the snow we've had.
Okay, one last question. What is greatest life advice you've ever received?
This is really simple. I got this advice while I was an intern at my first design job, and his name was Hal. I ended up naming my daughter Hallie, but he said, Melissa, you should have a hobby outside of your work. Even though you're in a creative industry, you need to have a creative outlet outside of work too.
That is a good point. I never noticed it more than when I was in like a straight Air Force job. I guess I never realized I had a creative side so much as when it was, you know, suffocated, basically.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Good life advice. Melissa, I am just overjoyed and so grateful that you took the time to be with us today and just share your life and your voice with us and just so beautifully explained minimalism and really some great principles that we can all adopt to our everyday life. Tell us all where we can find you online and on social media.
First, thank you guys for having me. And you can find me online at thefaux, FAUXMartha.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest, not Twitter anymore, at thefauxmartha as well.
Okay. I wanted to say one thing, Melissa. This is Tedra again before we say goodbye. I just wanted to say thank you for responding to our email. If there's some that get missed, I was like, I'm glad she picked up ours and responded and came on today. So that's great.
Well, I have someone on the other side now who's come on, and she's one of the biggest reasons this is a game that I'm still working, and she's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Smart. All right. Thanks so much. We'll hopefully talk to you again someday.
Keep at it, Melissa. Keep at it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. This was a huge encouragement. Bye.
Jade. So time for a little host-to-host chat. As soon as I'm done this afternoon, I'm going to be cleaning out my closet.
I know. I really want to hit up my kitchen. I'm not quite sure what I can get rid of, but I'm going to go through her articles. She's got like a whole bunch on kitchen minimalism. I'm going to go through them.
Well, and you're about to move. Yes. And so it's the perfect time to purge. Okay. So I know you and Dave, y'all have been waiting many, many months to find out your next assignment because he wanted to do ROTC command as his last rotation in the Air Force. Where are you going? Tell us.
We are going to Amherst, Massachusetts. This is Western Massachusetts, 2 hours west of Boston. It was not my first choice.
But it was on your list, third choice.
It was definitely on the list. Yeah, it was third choice out of five.
I'd love to know, like, if anyone is listening from that area, if they could just, like, email you yes. or something and give you all the good deets. Like, you need to know all the details.
Yeah, like, what do I need to know? I mean, I know it's pretty small, but there are five universities, so it's a big, diverse university town. And I think a lot of the aspects are going to be cool. I mean, Massachusetts, I think, I don't know, as long as you can look up 20 years maybe plus, is number one or number two for schools, like state.
That's huge.
Yeah, and so that's amazing because anybody who listens knows I have two kids and one of which is on the spectrum, and so I'm always caring about the special needs community and situation. So it's pretty exciting to be going to a place where that is number one priority. And I think I read that they spend per capita like more on each student, yeah, than any other state. I think like the average classroom size is something like 10 or it's ridiculous.
Curious like what's happening up there in Massachusetts, because wasn't that, I think that's the state that had not universal, but like healthcare for all, like before there was yeah. ever nationwide option. Yeah. Who's the guy from Utah? I should know this. He was the governor of the state and he implemented it. I might have this all wrong. And if I do, I apologize to everyone, but Mitt Romney.
Okay.
He was, I want to say the governor. Is that possible? Oh my gosh. We're going to leave this in, but I'm not blowing this to bits. But anyway, they had some great like healthcare situation going on up there. So the fact that they have great healthcare and they have great education, mm-hmm. like what are they doing that the rest of us need to get going on in our states?
I know. It is interesting. It's going to be really interesting to move there. I mean, I grew up in Montreal. So in some ways, I'm sort of used to that area. But man, never been to Massachusetts. And so it's going to be cool. It's going to be interesting and different. And four seasons. I'm a little freaked out about the heavy winters, but I mean, I grew up with it. I can handle it. Cross country skiing time.
You got it. Okay, so we just want to thank you guys for listening today. And if you like the show, we'd love for you to head over to iTunes and give us a positive review. If you give us a review, we're going to post and share about it. So please do. So you can find us at wegettoknow.com where you can sign up for our newsletter. And we're on social media at We Get to Know. Head over to Instagram. We'd love to hear from you and get your opinions on guests and show ideas. Our music is provided by the talented Blake Atwell of Studio 1916. Until next time, take care as we continue to get to know all of our favorite people.